You're listening to Red Eye on Vancouver Cooperative Radio, CFRO 102.7 FM.
Afghanistan and three of its neighboring countries have agreed to build a $7.6 billion pipeline to deliver natural gas from Turkmenistan to Pakistan and India. This project will run straight through Kandahar province, where Canadian soldiers are stationed. The construction of this pipeline raises questions about what role the Canadian military may play in defending the project. Yet the pipeline is not mentioned in discussions of Canada's involvement in Afghanistan. John Foster wants to open debate on the pipeline and its significance for Canada. The Canadian Centre for Policy Alternatives has recently published his report, A Pipeline Through a Troubled Land. John Foster is a former economist with Petro-Canada, the World Bank, and the Inter-American Development Bank, and he joins me on the phone now from Kingston. Hi, John.
Hi, and your listeners too.
Now, Afghanistan doesn't sound like the most logical transit point for delivery of energy supplies to India and Pakistan, but how does it fit into the whole scheme?
And indeed, the biggest question, why has Afghanistan become this central focus of Canada's defense aid and foreign policy? And what I notice is that Afghanistan has several neighbors, particularly to the north, that are rarely talked about. And one of these is Turkmenistan, the country you mentioned. It has immense reserves of natural gas. They're bigger than Canada's. They could be the fourth largest in the world. Pakistan and India need the gas. They have, particularly India, becoming an economic superpower, and they're energy short. Afghanistan is an energy bridge, that's what they call it. In donor meetings that Canadian officials attend, a pipeline corridor. So these four countries you mentioned, Turkmenistan, Afghanistan, Pakistan, and India, have been meeting regularly over the past 6 years on this project. The sponsor of the project is the Asian Development Bank, and Canada is an active member of that bank.
Has this been worked on for a long time, this project?
Yes, it... historically, it dates back to the mid-90s and emerges out of the breakup of the Soviet Union when these five countries of Central Asia became independent in 1991. The first of these interests was about the mid-1990s with an Argentinian firm called Bridas. It invited in UNICAL. But UNICAL decided to go it alone in 1996, and they were hard negotiating. They pulled out of the project. It was a consortium in 1998. But the U.S. government, for its part, and I think it's highly political, continued negotiating with the de facto rulers of the country, the Taliban, who had running about 90% of it by then, who were very interested in either of these two pipelines, and so it continued until 2001. But no sooner was Karzai de facto put in office as the new interim president of Afghanistan, then negotiations started again, this time at a governmental level. So Karzai was quickly talking with Musharraf of Pakistan in February of 2002. The Asian Development Bank entered the scene in 2003, offering technical assistance for a feasibility study, and the thing has continued at a relatively leisurely pace since then. This year, things seem to have stepped up quite a bit.
And what sort of scale is this project?
Well, the capital cost you mentioned is $7.6 billion. I guess whether Canadian or American doesn't matter now. The amount of gas is large. If I said 33 billion cubic meters, just assume that's a big number. And but to mention that there is a rival pipeline scheme where Iran is interested in offering gas also to Pakistan and India in the same amount. The project costs pretty well the same. And Iran, too, has immense reserves of natural gas. They're the second largest in the world. And Pakistan and India are basically negotiating with both countries, as to say, on the one hand, Iran, and on the other hand, Turkmenistan and of course, Afghanistan for the gas. And the question is, which project will win out, or both? And they each have their pros and cons.
And where does Canada fit into this?
Well, that's a very interesting question. And that's the question that I puzzle my head over. Clearly, Canada has capability in pipelining and in all sorts of things, and the provision of all sorts of goods and services. But for what I can make of the matter, the pipeline politics here is being driven not by Canada but by the United States, and that Canada, what's driving Canadian foreign policy here is U.S. foreign policy, and also, of course, which in a sense is the fallout from that, keeping it being a major player within NATO, which is also in line with U.S. foreign policy in Central Asia. So pipeline politics are at play here, and Canada's thrown in its lot with the U.S., which is not very surprising. What is surprising to me is that this tale is basically an untold story, and that's why I wrote this report.
And what would that mean, Canada having thrown in its lot in terms of the pipeline itself? Does that mean things militarily? Does that mean opportunities for Canadian capital to get in on the Turkmenistan gas development?
Yes, the way I think I'd like to answer your thought there is that this pipeline project, the one through Afghanistan, could be, you know, has both good bad news and good news associated with it. And the bad news is, as you started in speaking to us, is that the pipeline route goes slap through Helmand, where the British are, and Kandahar, where Canadian forces are. In both cases, the heart of the insurgency. And so if work starts on building the pipeline with the insurrection going on, obviously it could be a target, very much so. It doesn't have to be. After all, the U.S. have been negotiating with the Taliban at a time when the Taliban ran the country in the 1990s, but that's a different tale today. The good news is that if this project were put through, it could become Afghanistan's largest development project. And that's why I find it very surprising. There's been virtually no talk of it in Canada. The transit fees alone could generate maybe half the government's current revenue, pay for infrastructures and teachers, girls in school and so forth. And there are the regional benefits. The pipeline would link, not only supply the gas to market, but would link four countries together, economically and politically, in a way that's potentially good for peace between them. From the point of view of Canadian suppliers of whether it's goods and services or pipeline companies or those that explore for and develop and would like to produce gas, clearly the latter in Turkmenistan, that presents for them an opportunity. But on that, they're quiet. I would just say that I worked on a similar project in a project team for the cousin bank of the Asian Development Bank, the one for Latin America called the Inter-American Development Bank. There we were working on the co-financing of a big pipeline from Bolivia down to Brazil, the same scale, down to Rio de Janeiro, jointly with the World Bank, other banks, public and private companies. And what was interesting to me in trying to answer your question about Canadian companies' interest is that whereas before, when we first went down to Rio, we only started to get to know what companies might be interested. They came out of the woodwork, Shell, Enron, you name it, British Gas. And my supposition is that the same will be true in the case of Afghanistan. It's certainly proving true right now as with this week's breaking news for Iraq, where the four previous partners in the nationalized company, the Iraq Petroleum Company, that's Shell, BP, ExxonMobil, and Total, are back again, about to sign large contracts. And so the companies reappear.
You mentioned it could be a big revenue generator for Afghanistan. Of course, the question is for the Afghan people, it depends on the integrity and honesty of a government, which is much in doubt.
I suppose I have to chuckle. I think that's right. I was interested that the breaking of this news, which was in the Globe and Mail initially, and then the other papers on last Thursday, induced a letter to the Globe from the ambassador of Afghanistan, basically coming quite open and candid about the fact, yes, that pipeline's there, the countries are there, and indeed the figure in my report of 160 million a year of revenues, you can double that figure. And he gives another number, over 300 million. Hadn't seen that before. So this is becoming a project you can talk about, it seems, in Canada, was before not so.
No, it wasn't mentioned in the Manley report, apparently.
Yes, I found that very strange. The Manley report, which underpinned the government's recommendations for the extension of the mission by another couple of years, treated Afghanistan as if it was an island. No mention, except in a small box, which just listed the nations that neighbored it, which were its neighboring countries, and talked about Pakistan from a point of view of the problem of the Pashtuns straddling both sides of the border. And that was the end of the subject. And no mention of energy, gas, or pipelines. Very strange. It is, however, mentioned in the Afghanistan's own five-year development plan presented to donors 2 weeks ago or so in Paris, at which Canada was very much present.
Now, as you mentioned, you were part of development projects, this massive one from Bolivia through to Brazil, and you've been involved in many other countries. This project, given the conflict going on, how would you evaluate it in terms of making loans for development?
Yes. What I would say was that I would only see this project going ahead if there were peace. And that means, to have peace in that part, to my mind, can only be peace if the various parties to it, including the southern tribes, the Pashtun, and within them the Taliban folk, are made stakeholders to the project. And if they are, and with that also revenues come to them, as well as to the central government, then I think you can move forward. What I don't see is what you were describing earlier, the problems of corruption and so forth. The money's going to Kabul. I think Kabul is probably as remote to the people living in Kandahar as Ottawa must feel remote to you living in Vancouver. It's an awful long way away. It's a different province, and they're different tribes. I wouldn't want to carry that comparison too far.
You wrote your report with the hope of stirring some discussion of this issue. How do you feel about it now that it's been completed and gotten a bit of report in the media?
Well, I would say that with a bit of luck, the debate in Canada is just beginning, and so obviously I'm delighted. But what I feel is that after my report came out on last Thursday, the press, some of them, tried to interview ministers. They ducked it. But some government officials spoke briefly, it seems, albeit off the record without identification. But to my mind, it's still not clear how our support for security in Afghanistan relates to this planned pipeline. And I think Canadians want to know all the reasons for being at war, and we need clarity from the government. And the issue, to my mind, is that If peace were to break out this year, which I doubt, and I don't think marines and airplanes and bombing villages and so forth is in any way going to make for peace. It'll just make for further insurrection and bitterness. If it were to break out, then what the Afghans are saying, the government, is that by the year 2010, so optimistic they are, that the pipeline route will be cleared of landmines and of Taliban. Sounds like as if there'll be a sanitized corridor for the pipeline. And I note that 2010, when construction could then start, is 1 year before 2011, the Canadian forces' commitment. So that makes me just pose the question, would our troops, if this scenario happened, be there defending a pipeline? And I think Canadians want to know all the reasons why our troops are in Kandahar. We need more clarity. I would hope it's part of the next election debate, but we'll find out.
Well, thank you for posing the question so clearly. It's very useful, and I appreciate your time. Bye-bye.
Thanks so much, now.
You're welcome. Bye-bye. Bye-bye, John. I've been speaking with John Foster. He's an international energy economist and an expert on the world oil scene. You can read his paper at policyalternatives.org. It's called A Pipeline Through a Troubled Land, Afghanistan, Canada, and the New Great Energy Game.